and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. How are you lurking conservatives? I know you out there, you little snotties. You're just sitting there waiting, building up momentum, thinking that you got a case. It's over, you guys. It's over for you lion spinning bastards. How are you, Mike? Mark Riley?
Mike Riley.
Who's Mike Riley?
He's a football coach.
Is he?
Yeah, he is.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man.
Got the tie-dye shirt on, feeling kind of festive this morning.
Hey, I listened to the Grateful Dead before I got
did
here.
Did you not? No, you did not.
No, I was trying to get my computer to work at home. Then the printer wouldn't work right. Then I get here, the printer doesn't work right here. I'm jinxed.
Chaos, man. Hey. It's all chaos. I went into a cereal frenzy this morning. Did you ever go into the childlike cereal frenzy?
Only for Frosted Flakes.
Yeah, no, this wasn't for Frosted Flakes. It doesn't matter to me. I don't know if it's comfort food or what, but I was stressing out myself last night and today, and I went into a massive cereal frenzy where you just eat cereal and it makes you feel better. And you know you're in a childlike cereal frenzy when you finish a cereal and there's still a little milk left, and you're like, I'm going to put some more cereal in.
Oh,
yes,
God, man.
That's where I was
is
at.
That what that is?
Frenzied cereal. But it was, it made
I
me feel better.
I go through that like maybe once every 2 or 3 years where I just get, and it's always Frosted Flakes. I get a bowl, I put the milk in, I eat it, I get down, there's more milk than there is cereal, so you reach for the cereal and pour
you
more.
Exactly.
And next thing you're eating 3 bowls of cereal.
That is exactly it. Because then you're like, oh, now there's a little too much flakes.
Got to put more milk.
And then it's a never-ending cycle.
Yep. You know?
But it made me feel better. I got to admit, it did make me feel better. And my cats were going crazy this morning. I don't even know why. Sometimes I wake up and it's just insanity. It's just cat insanity flying down the halls. And I know there's someone moving.
That's weird you say that.
Why?
Because I had a dream that involved your cats last night. I swear to God.
Maybe it was you doing
and
it.
And I've never seen them before.
They were picking up on the Riley mojo. They were like, oh, no, we're in Riley's head.
That's right.
That's what was going on. And someone's moving downstairs, so I get a little nervous, you know. Because I don't know if the sound is traveling when they're doing their cat party thing. Like, I don't, because I know that the walls are really thick in my apartment. The ceiling seems really thick. But I don't know if they never complained, the people that lived there before. But I hear some progressives are moving in downstairs.
Oh, well, so then they'll complain.
Let's see if they progressively. Exactly. They will complain. You're right.
Wait, by the way, Marin gets fish from those people across the street. I don't like that either.
No, I'm going to get some flack. It's like, look, we're sensitive to the cat issue, but I think you have to be sensitive to our sleep issue. And we like cats. We'd like to meet a compromise here. Perhaps you can insulate your floor. Perhaps get rid of a cat.
Yeah,
I can see it coming. Folks, we'll be broadcasting live from Elmo Restaurant tomorrow morning. We'll have author David Rakoff, activist Jeremy Gilley, plus Lawton Smalls from Planet Bush. No, he's not going to be there, actually. Lawton is going to be on assignment.
Really?
Yes, that's what I hear.
On the
road.
But
we will have, I believe, Pendejo will be here. Elmo is on 7th Avenue between 19th and 20th, and we'll be there tomorrow morning from 6 to 9. I'm told that there will be some coffee. I'm told that there will be continental breakfast. I don't know if that includes cereal or not.
Dick Cheney?
No. Dick Cheney. I don't think Dick Cheney's going to be there.
I emailed him.
You did?
You
think he was going to come?
I said, okay, come on.
Yeah, join the Morning Sedition March on Washington, my friends. We'll be broadcasting live from the XM radio studios in D.C. next Friday, September 23rd, the day before the Green Fest and the big anti-war rally. We're going to have Cindy Sheehan on. We're going to have, she's going to be there live in person, which is going to be exciting. You're going to need tickets for this one, folks. So go to MorningSedition.com to enter to win a free pair of tickets to go to D.C. because we're not really officially on the air there, you know, in the real sense. But people, of course, are podcasting and streaming.
They're streaming and they're podcasting, and we're leading this march on Washington for our freedom.
We are? Are we leading it?
Yes.
I had no idea that was in my contract.
I'm going
to lead the march
there
on Washington. You are?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
It's going to be a variation of the I Have a Dream.
That's what I figured. I Have a Dream. Mark Riley has a dream.
I had a dream about Mark Maron's cat.
Yeah, Monkey and Fonda and the other one. Yeah, listen to this. This is we were talking to Bob Kerry last week about the quote-unquote bipartisan commission that the Republicans were trying to bully the Democrats into in order to investigate the horrendous events after Katrina in terms of the bungling by this administration to respond appropriately. And apparently the Republicans were trying to sort of, I guess it was basically, they were saying it'll be bipartisan, but you don't have the power to subpoena, you don't have the power to do anything but sit there and at our behest and claim that it's bipartisan. So
yeah.
Harry Reid, to his benefit, said the Democrats aren't going to do that because it's not a real bipartisan commission. And now the Senate Republicans voted down an attempt by Hillary Clinton to establish an independent bipartisan panel not unlike the 9/11 commission panel. And so they shot that down, too.
Well, yeah, and what Hillary Clinton was proposing was an independent panel that would not be composed of members of the Senate. In other words, she wasn't doing this so that she could get appointed to it, or some of her colleagues or friends or people that thought like her could get appointed to it. This would be an independent commission, much like the one that had Bob Kerry and Tom Kane and all these, Lehman, the other former Secretary of the Navy, a group of folks, independent, nonpartisan folks, to take a serious look at what happened. And maybe the Republicans are a little scared of what Bob Kerry and the 9/11 Commission came up with.
Yeah, and even then, they met a lot of resistance. It took them a lot to subpoena people to get what they wanted, to get documents they wanted. You know, the Republicans, because they are the majority, can hold up anything. But thank God, on some level, the 9/11 Commission did achieve a few things. I think that there was some disappointment on behalf of the Democrats involved, and also some disappointment on victims of 9/11 as to how much of what was, you know, shown during that that investigation was actually implemented.
Well, you got to look at what Bush did during the run-up to the 9/11 Commission. Mm-hmm. At first, he vehemently opposed it. Remember, there was a point at which he didn't even want any of his inner circle testifying in front of him? Then suddenly he turned around and he embraced it. And he sat down with them and he talked with them. In other words, he tried to co-opt the thing. Look for something very similar to this to happen with this commission, because I think it's going to happen sooner or later, but Bush is going to try and get ahead of the curve. I supported it all along.
Well, as we know, Bush only does things when people start to hate him publicly, and people start to hate him, and the numbers start to show that he's losing momentum. So, and that was, I think, primarily because of the 9/11 families and the pressure that they put on the administration. So if there is some resistance, clearly his poll numbers are already in the toilet. He's losing a tremendous amount of political capital and momentum. So if there is some activism on behalf of the families and victims of this hurricane, you know, maybe we will get a panel. Maybe that will happen. That's still, you know, open. But they did shoot down Hillary Clinton yesterday in a vote that was, I believe,
strictly along partisan lines.
44 votes.
Yeah, except for Jim Jeffords from Vermont, who, of course, is an independent, but usually votes with the Democrats. I think it was 40-something. And there were two people that didn't vote, including one senator from Louisiana.
Huh.
Yeah,
that's odd. In a nonpartisan Congressional Research Service, finds Louisiana governor took the necessary steps. And we knew that. We knew that last week. This is Representative John Kine is requested to review the law and legal accountability relating to federal action in response to Hurricane Katrina. And this is a nonpartisan report. This was just a request put in by Conyers, but this is a report that concludes decisively that Governor Blanco did the exact right things. Bush administration completely blew it. I mean, all necessary conditions for federal relief were met on August 28th. Quote, the declaration of an emergency by the president makes federal emergency assistance available, unquote. And the president made such a declaration on August 28th. The public record indicates that several additional days passed before such assistance was actually made available to the state. Now, we read a letter from Governor Blanco to the president that was written on August 28th, a day before the hurricane, saying, I request that you declare an expedited major disaster for the state of Louisiana as Hurricane Katrina, a Category 5 hurricane, approaches our coast south of New Orleans, beginning on August 28th, 2005, and continuing. A little further down, it says, based on the predictions we have received from the National Weather Service and other sources, I have determined that this incident will be of such severity and magnitude that effective response will be beyond the capabilities of the state and the affected local governments, and that supplementary federal assistance will be necessary. There you go. That's a day before the hurricane hit.
And you know why this is important? Because former FEMA boss Mike the Crybaby Brown is now trying to blame Blanco for his mistakes made in connection with Katrina.
Yeah, and that's everybody's trying to blame Blanco. And, you know, to her credit, she has accepted responsibility for her part in this.
Yes.
And she has said, look, you know, there were problems all the way up the chain. There were federal and local problems. This was a disaster on all levels. But I will accept my responsibility as governor of this state. I will take responsibility for what I was part of this. But that does not dismiss, nor does it let them, FEMA or the federal government, off the hook, because it really is their responsibility.
Of course.
And if you trace it back, the responsibility was on them when they cut the 50-some-odd million from the budget that meant to go to repairing these levees. levees. This could have been taken care of. We now have a $150 billion problem because these guys were too greedy to put $50 million or so into repairing these levels, these levees. It's 16 past the hour. We're going to talk a little bit more about this, about a little bit. We've also got some exciting news about Chuck D. We've also got some, we're going to sort of decipher some of the religious rights language because I think they're missing a point in their reaction to the hurricane. It's 16 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Hi, this is Terry Jones from Monty Python, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark on Morning Sedition. They're not the Messiah. They're very naughty boys on Air America Radio.
Past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly.
Hey.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Tomorrow we'll be broadcasting from Elmo Restaurant down there on 7th Avenue between 19th and 20th. We're going to have David Rakoff there. Activist Jeremy Gilley is going to be there. We're going to have some funny. Johnny K Street's coming down. We got some free coffee, a little continental breakfast. And, my friends, we will be premiering. We will be playing first Chuck D's new song.
Hey!
And I think it's a reaction to Hurricane Katrina, am I right? Yes, I mean, and Chuck D, I don't know if he's going to stop by or not, but he has said, you guys go ahead and play it first.
All right!
Yeah,
hey,
it's a world premiere, my friend. A world premiere on Morning Sedition.
A world premiere.
That's pretty exciting.
That is very exciting.
You know, that along the side, the fact that, you know, we talked to Hugh Kaufman, the renegade, the guy who's like got the guts to speak out at the Environmental Protection Agency, and he sort of like gave us the jump on how toxic those waters are down there. We're going to get into that in a little while.
And how toxic the employees in his own agency are, too.
Yeah, no kidding.
And you know, guys,
yeah.
You know, this will be the second world premiere that Morning Sedition has had.
Did I miss the first one?
Yeah, R.E.M. They gave
that's right.
Yeah, the world premiere of their new song.
Where that's was right. I? Where
you
was
were
I?
On vacation, my friend.
So wait, no, here I'm on vacation, and we had a world premiere on my show, and I was not told that I could have listened to it. Maybe you could have sent me an MP3 or something. Thanks for caring.
You were busy. You know, you were on a helicopter or something.
Yeah, well, that's right. I was on a helicopter. I was doing the important work.
Yeah, big work.
I was on a helicopter with no doors doing the important work.
That's right.
Terrifying myself while simultaneously seeing some of the most beautiful things ever. How do you like that? Thank you for bringing me Nevermind. I appreciate that, Chris. I appreciate it. I love you, man. You okay today? Everything all right?
I'm
two
great.
Days after your birthday, you coming down a little bit? Did you get any good presents? Come on.
Yes,
man.
Yes, I got a good presents.
Yeah, what? Uh-oh. Like what?
Sex.
That's it.
I knew he was going to say that.
Okay, birthday sex, fine.
My dad gave me $100.
$100.
Yeah, I had a nice dinner,
mm-hmm.
which actually I paid for.
My birthday's coming up, you know.
$100, birthday yes, sex, yes, and a birthday dinner.
Hey, I don't want any presents, but on September 27th, my birthday
is... Yeah, mine's a week from today.
That's right. Yours is a little before me.
Yeah,
September
23rd?
22nd. 22nd is Riley. I'm the 27th. So what, are you Virgo or Libra?
Last day of Virgo.
Oh, okay. So that's the difference between you and I.
Yes.
I see.
Yes.
I'm constantly looking for balance in a perpetual state of chaos. You, on the other hand, grounded somehow.
There's a machine that does it.
Oh yeah, really? You hook yourself up to it.
Yeah.
Well, look, here we go. Let's talk a little bit more about Michael Brown. Just, you know, shamelessly blaming Governor Blanco of Louisiana. And the reason this is important is that this is it's so, you know, commonplace for any you know, Republican stooge who works on the behalf of this administration to not take responsibility for anything. And the bottom line is, you know, how long are we going to talk about this? For a little while longer, because he was basically, you know, Brown. Brown is basically saying that, look, if they had more things facilitated on the ground when we got there, we could have done a better job. You know, what happens with the Republican spin machine is that they create a sense of confusion. What they do is they can create a sense of confusion in terms of the information that's getting out there. So you hear all this different stuff from all these different areas. But the bottom line is Brown screwed up. He was incompetent. He had no plan. The other bottom line is that the Republicans, you know, cut the funding to fix these levees when they knew they needed to be fixed. Bottom line, whatever happened on the ground in Louisiana involving the state government was a minor transgression in the face of just how incompetent and how unprepared the federal government was and the Bush administration was to handle this. If they had kept the FEMA post, a cabinet post, a FEMA head, they might have been given him more money and made him privy to a little more information and kept things a little more together down there. But by trying to privatize disaster relief and trying to make the government smaller and placing the FEMA head under the umbrella of Homeland Security, it was a tremendous oversight. It was not even an oversight. It was a mistake.
Let me tell you something. Michael Brown, I would have really liked to have been with David Kirkpatrick and Scott Shane, who were the people that wrote the article on the interview with Brown for the New York Times. Because he must have sounded like Lawton Smalls in the middle of one of those crying fits or something.
Sure.
I tried to do everything. I tried to say to people, I tried to tell Governor Blanco, I tried. He didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line, and the other thing, and see, this always happens when political hacks are called to explain themselves.
Yeah.
He tried to keep Bush off the hook, but what he said in this interview calls very directly into question when the White House knew there was a problem and what the White House did about the problem.
Politics is lying. I'm starting to believe that almost all politics is lying, or at least not saying something, or at least letting things happen and figuring out who to blame. I will tell you this, though. The newest hurricane made landfall with 85 mile per hour winds down there off the coast of North Carolina.
Ophelia.
Hit, not that hard, but hard enough for FEMA to freak out and put 200 workers on the ground in North Carolina, which is actually too many people for a hurricane of Ophelia's size, but...
Who's counting?
I'll tell you, they must have 50 guys, FEMA guys in FEMA outfits standing on the beach going, no! But they're obviously overcompensating. They put a Coast Guard rear admiral in charge to command any federal response. Command any federal response to the storm. So they are like, look, we're okay. We're prepared. See, we're prepared.
Well, compare this to New Orleans, where Michael Brown himself says that FEMA sent an emergency response team of 10 to 20 people.
You know, we got a report last week that Musab al-Zarqawi, the leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq, said, I believe devastating hurricane that hit the United States occurred because people in Iraq and Afghanistan prayed, basically. They prayed to God, and this was God accepting these prayers to Allah. And you know what? Pat Robertson's got a conflicting view, another God, but I've got an idea of my own as to what these prayers are really asking for. We'll get into that in a second. It's 27 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. What are we listening to now, Chris?
This is REM, Permanent Vacation.
Oh, okay. So this is a song that you guys premiered on my show without me here.
The Morning Sedition world premiere.
Okay, that's good. Right. I'm glad I was told about that. I'm kidding. Yeah, Brendan and Dan were here doing a wonderful job hosting the disaster coverage.
Yeah.
And apparently, Mike Stipe and the REM fellas said, you know, it's pretty important that you get this on quickly. Because it's pertinent to what's going on now. And
it was,
of course,
before the disaster.
Oh, really? Yeah. It was. No, it wasn't.
No. It wasn't when I was here.
Yeah. He was still on vacation. That's the joke, Chris. Were you here at all, Chris?
I mean, maybe what, I was. Maybe
yeah,
I was.
That's all right. Maybe there was something on the screen there was distracting you during the premiere. Maybe you don't like REM, or it was more important to look at big screen televisions for a few minutes. You know, maybe that's what was going on. Hey, don't let me bother you here. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm going to go ahead and finish doing my show.
Is this a comedy show? I didn't know.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's pretty funny. Where are you going to be working next week?
Uh-oh.
Well, you know what? Actually, maybe Future Mark can tell me because he's on line one.
Uh-oh. Cool. I love that guy. Put him through.
Hey,
buddy,
what's up?
What's going on in 2050?
I am partying in New Orleans.
Oh, man, that's fantastic. New Orleans.
No, Mark, New Orleans. Let me explain. They rebuilt New Orleans, and it was just as beautiful as it was before, and everything was cool for about 30 years.
Oh, man, that is such good news.
But
oh, no.
Then the late Pontius Gadget Train Monster emerged from its 10,000-year hibernation, and everyone had to move again.
Whoa, back up. The Lake Pontchartrain Monster?
Yeah, man. I mean, he kind of looks like this, like a giant crawdad. We actually call him Ponchy.
Oh, dude. Is that him?
Yep. Hey, Ponchy!
So, whoa, he, like, destroyed the city?
No, nothing like that. He just crawled out of the muck and stared at everybody. He's giant, so it was pretty creepy. Kind of scared away the convention crowd. And, you know, after that, he just curled up near the Garden District and, you know, went back to sleep.
All right, well, that sounds pretty tame. I mean, why'd everybody have to move?
Well, it was partly the snoring, but mostly the smell. I don't know what he ate 10,000 years ago, but it is bad news, my friend.
Really?
It is totally backfiring on him. But the good news is, the gases he creates allowed the city to be rebuilt in the air.
Yeah?
I mean, the city, man, it floats about 1,000 feet up, and the gravity got so light, people were just tossing girders around.
Wow.
I mean, it only took like 8 months to build.
All right, okay, well, that sounds pretty interesting. I mean, but is the new New Orleans as good as the old New Orleans?
Dude, it's even better, and I'm talking way more decadent.
Wow, more decadent. How could that be?
Well...
Oh, my God!
Yeah, Ponchy, don't worry. Everybody carries giant matches. Anyways, New Orleans is like a ton of fun. People come here to party from other planets, man.
Well, that sounds cool. Keep talking. Well, wait a minute. What the hell is that music?
Oh, that's Quaz. It's a mixture of ragtime, whale song, and Japanese girl singers. People love it down here. I mean, people love it everywhere, actually. New Orleans is known as the birthplace of Quaz.
Huh. Jeez.
Oh, yeah. The other thing about Ponchy's gas is it makes you really high. I mean, everybody is wasted and everybody is naked. I mean, there's a lot of intergalactic perversion going on here, man. Mm. I mean, you should see what the Neptusians do when they finish flarging the sorority girls from Delta Quadrant. Whoa, it makes for a good show, buddy. But leave the kids at home. And, of course, the food is fantastic.
Oh, yeah, the food. What's the food like?
It's exactly the same. You wouldn't mess with it, would you? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Am I right?
Is that Ponchy again?
No, man, that was me. I just had the best etouffee I've ever had in my life. I need to walk it off.
All right, well, cool, man. Before you go, do you have any, advice for me?
Yeah. Ponchy's got a cousin in Lake Michigan, so you might want to buy some airspace above Chicago.
All right. Thanks, man. Talk to you later.
Later.
All right, so let me get this straight. I got to buy some airspace above Chicago. I'll get on that right away. We got a little something about Chicago coming up in terms of the city's reaction to the Iraq War. They've become one of a few cities that has actually said, you know, bring the troops home. And Senator Robert Byrd said that yesterday, too. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. What I would like to tell people now is we're going to be broadcasting live from Washington, D.C. next Friday from the XM Studios down there. It's a great performance space. Cindy Sheehan's going to come down and join us. We're going to be talking to some other people. And if you'd like to come down to Washington, D.C. to see us and hang out, you can go to morningsedition.com and register to win tickets. We'd love to have you. We know a lot of people are willing to travel to come see us perform live. People have come from all over, from Madison, Wisconsin, Minnesota, people in Florida. People have traveled.
People have flown into town.
That's right, to come see the Mark and Mark Roadshow. Also, I'd like to say that tomorrow we are going to be premiering the world premiere of Chuck D's new song.
Yeah.
About the aftermath of Katrina. And here we go. Let's move into the world of Jesus, can we? In terms of general reaction to primarily the Iraq War, 2 months after Bush declared major combat in Iraq completed in May 2003, most Christians thought that the United States had acted prudently. Okay, according to a poll, this is a poll from the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life. Now, those agreeing with the military effort were 68% of the white mainline Protestants, 74% of white Catholics, and 79% of white evangelicals. Now, here's what happens, though. These surveys have been falling. Christians have been jumping off the Bush ship. All right, at a poll last July by Pew Forum showed 56% of white mainline Protestants and 54% of white Catholics supported military involvement. That's down a lot. Almost 20% each. Even among evangelicals, these down 11 percentage points, which I think is good. It's very telling. If these guys are leaving at all, any evangelicals are leaving the Bush camp, that's very surprising. But I'll tell you who isn't leaving. Pat Robertson. Never going to leave. And also, Pat Robertson is trying to amalgamate or meld together terrorism, abortion, and Hurricane Katrina. This guy is some sort of twisted genius sometimes in the evil way. Can we hear that sound there from Pat Robertson, Chris?
I was reading yesterday a book that was very interesting about what God has to say in the Old Testament about those who shed innocent blood. And he used the term that those who do this, the land will vomit you out. You look at your book, you look at the book of Leviticus and see what it says there. And this author of this said, well, vomit out means you're not able to defend yourself. But have we found that we are unable somehow to defend ourselves against some of the attacks that are coming against us, either by terrorists or now by natural disaster? Could they be connected in some way?
So he's connecting something. He's talking about abortion, but he seems to be trying to connect that one of the prices that we're paying for abortion is that we're being attacked by God and terrorists. This is what he's saying, that somehow or another, God and terrorists are working in unison, but separately, I'm sure, in his mind. And then you have Chuck Colson, who said, if I could quote this, said on his show, he said, quote, did God have anything to do with Katrina? People ask. My answer is he allowed it, and perhaps he allowed it to get our attention so that we don't delude ourselves into thinking that all we have to do is put things back the way they were and life will be normal again, end quote. So basically what they're saying is that Katrina was brought down upon us by God to teach us something. Robertson says the terrorists are that way as well. Well, I think that if we take this logic one step further, now that Bush has accepted responsibility for his shortcomings in reacting to Katrina, isn't it pretty clear to say that what can be gleaned from both of these religious fanatics' words is that God is trying to tell us that Bush stinks as a president, and because he, in effect, did not respond properly to God, and he wasn't prepared to accept God's wrath, that maybe God is really trying to point out to us that this president... And I'm talking to Christians now, and I'm talking to people who believe Pat Robertson, if there's a few of you out there. If you have any logic ability left in your brain, it's clear to see that God is trying to tell us that Bush is a bad president.
Well, you know, Pat Robertson's show, The 700 Club, reaches 863,000 people a day. Mm. I don't know how many people Colson's radio show reaches, but it is amazing to me that these people have a forum like this to spew this kind of, I mean, this is stuff, you know, coming out of progressives or coming out of leftists, we'd be locked up mm-hmm. for saying this sort of thing. They'd have the people in the white coats up here, and we'd be in a mental hospital. Yet these guys run around.
I'll tell you, you know, and the interesting thing is Zarqawi is claiming that the reason the hurricane hit America is because of the prayers of the Iraqi people and the Afghani people who lost loved ones and people who they know in the war. So he saying that he's claiming responsibility that Allah caused it. These guys are claiming responsibility that their God caused it. I am not somebody who believes in God, per se. But I do believe that if you follow the logic, and there's no other way to look at this, if you do believe that we are to learn something from Katrina, if God is telling us something, it is that George Bush is a bad president.
I wouldn't argue with that.
And
certainly.
It's interesting. In earlier manifestations of religious fanaticism and the attempt at theocracy or Christianizing America certainly has occurred throughout the history of the country, but it was very intense in the 50s in response to communism. There was a talking point, a Republican talking point, that was flying around the country like wildfire, you know, not unlike conservative, compassionate conservatives. You had godless communism.
Godless communism was a response to the end of the Second World War, when many people in America thought that World War III was around the corner and it was going to be fought with the Russians. Remember that George Patton, at the end of World War II, said, well, why don't we just continue on and go to Moscow?
Well, the reason we're talking about this is that in the Pledge of Allegiance, Michael Newdow, who has been a guest on our show, who went to the Supreme Court to try and get the pledge taken out of schools because his daughter, he didn't want his daughter to be indoctrinated with the God thing, and he thought that it was inappropriate in terms it violates school children's right to be free from coercive requirement to affirm God. He was shut down by the Supreme Court because he wasn't a legal guardian of his daughter, but yesterday there was a ruling by a district court, Judge Lawrence Carlton, out there in San Francisco, and they are going to allow they're going to put a restraining order on these schools where these kids go from this case to not have them say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yes.
Now, what people, many people know, of course, in our listenership, but many may not know where the Under God comes from. It's not in the original pledge, and it does come directly out of a period in time in the 50s in response to religious fanatics, you know, bullying a fairly religious president, and also on behalf of one particular preacher. We're going to get into this a little bit. When we come back, we're going to talk in detail about the ruling. It's an important ruling because it does show some movement in the direction of protecting children's rights, and it also is going to be a point of contention with the Christo-fascist zombie brigade. It's 46 past the hour. We're going to get into that in a second. You're listening to Air America Radio, Morning Sedition.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
This week, my guest is Mark Maron. Aren't you supposed to be in bed?
Yeah, almost.
It's 10 o'clock at night that we go out, and this is like, you
I'm
know.
Staying up late, man. I'm staying up late for your show. Yeah. Like, tomorrow I'm not going to be able to pull myself together to do my own
Mark
show.
Mark Maron may not be on Morning Sedition anymore because he stayed. It's my fault. Blame it on me. But this is about music, so let's get started with it. You got a good list here, man.
You think so? It was kind of freaked out because I didn't know, should I just do one from jazz and one from country and one from classical? And then I realized I don't listen to classical. I don't listen to that much jazz. Let's just go with what I know. Hey, there you go. That's me on Steve Earle. The Revolution Starts Now, Sunday at 10 p.m.
What was on the list, man?
On Air America. I'm not going to tip
it. I'm only
kidding. Yeah, you're going to have to find out. The weird thing is now, of course, I'm like, I've got my iPod filled with jazz because I'm going back to all my old jazz records. But at that moment, I hadn't gotten my iPod yet, so I was not as well versed. You know what I've been listening to in the last couple of days?
Who?
That weird, I don't know anything. You know about anything about the band Love? It was this guy named, I think, not Albert Lee, but I was hoping you would just say yes and we would run with it.
No.
Because I don't know much about it.
But I got a suggestion.
Forever Changes is the name of the album. It's supposedly genius, and I've been trying to get into it, but it's kind of psychedelic, kind of poppy, it's kind of trippy.
Okay.
It sounds like almost stereotypical 60s music, but I'm trying to appreciate the genius because so many people think that this thing is such a masterpiece.
You want to hear some masterpiece? You want to hear some genius?
All right.
And do your bit for New Orleans. Jelly Roll Morton.
Well, yeah, I like Jelly Roll Morton.
Listen to some Jelly Roll. Listen to New Orleans blues.
I definitely will. I've got a full box set of Clifton Chenier music.
Okay.
Chenier, how do they say it down there? I've been corrected a couple of times.
Well, they say Chenier. Some people say Chenier.
The Zydeco King. I'm a big Professor Longhair fan. You know, I definitely like Dr. John, but I'll go back a little further than that. I'll listen to a little King Oliver or a little Sidney Bechet.
Yeah.
Sure, man. Why not? Hey, sometimes when you read the headlines, we're going to get into this pledge case. I made a mistake. The ruling was laid down in Sacramento. I said San Francisco before. I'm sorry. So if you're in the middle of an email correcting me, go ahead and take a rest. We've got the Wi-Fi headline 5000 translator machine right here. We are going to feed it some headlines because it's hard to know what they say sometimes. Am I right, Chris? That sometimes you just don't know what they say. Thank God for the machine. Let's feed it some headlines, all right? When I screwed up the name, I just saw P.W. McDonald in the booth looking at me with a sour face. Like, no, just do the thing. From Washington Post, Bush seeks U.N. support on democracy. Bush seeks U.N. support on democracy. The translation is, Bush hears we told you so in six dozen languages. From the Indianapolis Star, my friends. Yes, Delta Northwest declare bankruptcy. Delta Northwest declare bankruptcy. Translation, airplane peanuts now paid to employees. From Reuters. From Reuters, Jimi Hendrix, Seattle home saved from demolition. Jimi Hendrix, Seattle home saved from demolition. Translation, preservationist's next goal, the car Mitch Mitchell currently lives in. They're going to have to get Mitch out.
Yeah. That's scary.
That's horrible. Have you been up to the... You haven't been to that big, beautiful music expo center in Seattle, have you?
I wanted to go not too long ago because they had an exhibit up there that I was very much interested in.
Yeah, you know, I got to be honest with you. I set that up like I'd been there, but I haven't been there either. And I'm looking forward to going because I hear they got a lot of Hendrix stuff.
I was outside of it.
It's great.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
It's so great to stand outside any Geary building because you're like, what the hell?
Exactly.
What does this mean? How does this guy build this stuff? What is that even made out of, the L.A. Symphony Hall, the new one? I haven't been in there either, but I stood outside going, this dude is awesome. I love that. He's just like, we can make it. You got to imagine if somebody presented that type of architecture even like 20 years ago, 15 years ago, it'd be like, what are you thinking? What are you? But if you look at Gaudi's work in Spain and Barcelona, it's really bizarre. But Geary, I mean, you look at some of that stuff and you would think that it would be impossible to build, and it's just stunning. Look, let's get back into this. Reciting the Pledge of Allegiance was ruled unconstitutional Wednesday by a federal judge who granted legal standing to two families represented by an atheist who we've had on our show, Michael Newdow,
yes,
who lost his previous case before the Supreme Court. Now, what does this mean, Riley? Apparently, you know, the judge said, you know, he would sign a restraining order preventing the recitation of the pledge at the three schools where the plaintiff's children attend.
Yeah, and it means he better get himself some bodyguards. I hate to say it, but people, for whatever reasons, feel strongly enough and have felt strongly enough about this whole under God pledge issue to threaten some of the judges who have ruled the same way this one has. Now, you know, and Mark, you very correctly pointed this out before the break, most people in America think that under God was in the pledge originally, and it was not.
Mm-hmm.
It was a response to a specific set of circumstances in the mid-1950s. Dwight Eisenhower, who, ironically enough, as a former military guy, did not want to send troops, American troops, overseas to fight communism.
Mm-hmm.
So what he began to do instead was jump on the bully pulpit and start railing against godless communism. And the synergy was amazing because at the same time, a Midwestern senator named Joe McCarthy was doing the same thing.
Well, it's interesting because apparently Ike heard it at a church he was attending. The reverend there, George M. Daugherty, was doing a sermon, and apparently in the sermon he basically said, the quote, "The United States of America, the pledge could be the pledge of any country. I could hear little Moscovites repeat a similar pledge to their hammer and sickle flag with equal solemnity." Is that the way you pronounce that word? Perhaps forgetting that liberty and justice for all was not the norm in Moscow, Daugherty urged the inclusion of under God in the pledge to denote what he felt was special about the United States, and Ike bought it. I mean, as you said, he was, you know, preaching. This idea had momentum. There was momentum coming from the Knights of Columbus and many other Christian organizations to do this, and he went ahead and did it on Flag Day in 1954, apparently. Now, of course, in this particular case that's going on now, the Beckett Fund, a religious rights group, is going to appeal it to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco.
Lots of luck.
So when we come back, you know, we're gonna talk about... what do we got? We got the Cliff Notes coming up. We've got
all kinds of stuff.
57 past the hour.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
866-492-2500. Getting life insurance has never been easier to cross off your list. Contains limitations not available in all states. Term life issued by Jefferson National, Dallas, Texas, under form number JNL-SEL-03, and the American Life Insurance Company of New York, New York, under form number ANLY-SEL-03. Call Jefferson National now, 1-866-492-2500, 1-866-492-2500. That's 1-866-492-2500.
Blah, 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 blah.
It's 6 past the hour. Good morning. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. How are you, folks? Riley.
Hey.
Mark Riley.
Where?
I just said hello to you, and you were, like, wondering what was going on.
No, it's just the strobe in the back.
I know. It's like, you know, when the strobe goes off, you're like, what's that? Must be God calling.
Either that or a fire.
Hey, in just a few minutes, my friends, we're going to tell you a little bit about Environmental Protection Agency report that was released on the health hazards of what is the soup of New Orleans, the horrendously toxic water. We had a guy on just a few days ago, Hugh Kaufman, a 35-year veteran of the Environmental Protection Agency, who was pissed off because this administration has gutted the effectiveness of his agency. And he said, look, there's going to be bad news coming out of New Orleans about the toxicity of that water. And we're going to get into detail about just what is in that water and what it means to the people that live there and the people that want to move back, because Mayor Ray Nagin was saying just the other day that it's depending on this report as to, you know, whether or not or how the move back to New Orleans unfolds. But first, we do have a friend of the show on the phone who I hope has got something prepared for us, and he didn't play it for another radio station before us.
Oh, he wouldn't do that.
Are you kidding? This guy.
Man. Hey, you know.
Brian from Everett, how are you?
What's up, Brian?
I work pro bono anyway. I get no money. You know, all the submissions and music and everything I've given you was before I got your treasured sacred text here on Saturday. And I wrote a song about it.
You mean about Jerusalem Syndrome, my screed?
I could match you syndrome for syndrome, man. There are so many parallels.
You want to go? You want to go syndrome for syndrome?
Yeah.
Okay.
The only thing with me is my wiener's inverted as opposed to extroverted. Like,
oh, my God. Brian, you know, it's nice that I appreciate you being candid, but I don't know if I needed that image right away.
Okay. This is a song about, it goes back to when you were 7 in Alaska.
Oh, wow.
It's called The Hot Dogs of Freedom, and it goes into issues. It's a short little song, and it's about the feeling of the North Pole and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
So to close the door on this confused, synchronistic relationship I have with you.
Okay.
That I've invented out of my own stalker primus type thing.
Great. So lay it out. Here we go.
Okay. When you're young and you're free, it feels like you're on top of the world. From the tip of the north, there's a feeling that God has unfurled. It shoots into your gray matter brain, and it gives you no need to explain. There's a reason for all of this pain, no need to complain. And the hot dogs of freedom remind us of when we were true. Cause we just took an atom, and that's because we had no clue. Now you won't see some eaten by certain Hasidim, cause it hurts when you finally find out what goes in them. And sometimes you lose them, and sometimes you win them, it's true. But there just ain't no telling what the hot dogs of freedom can do. Now a man can fly over the trees or fly out into space.
Uh-huh. Short song.
He can say he's a cracker or a Jew or not think about race. When the devil is staring down you, it don't matter if you're Gentile or Jew. You just gotta get out and say, get the hell out of my face. And the hot dogs of freedom explode on the 4th of July. They plump when you cook 'em, but nobody really knows why. Now some Franks are kosher and some have got pork, but dogs are all crammed into casings with pork, and pigs on the wing are still hovering up in the sky.
Pink Floyd reference.
But the hot dogs of freedom can still make a grown man cry. Yes, the hot dogs of freedom can still make a grown man grown.
Don't cry, Brian.
Oh, no, I just need to change my cat litter, man.
That was beautiful,
very
man.
Very nice, Brian. Right. Very nice.
That was beautiful. Now I got to explain what the Hot Dogs of Freedom are, what the references.
You got to sell on your book, man. You got to buy the book. You don't have to explain it.
The book's out of print.
Wait, you know, did I tell you?
I mean, didn't you have to get it from India or something?
No, it came from Orange County, down where the terrorist, the white, the American, the dude is.
Gadon, Adam Gadon. Yeah. So
you said Hassan.
No,
Gadon
it's
or Hassan.
Gadon.
Gadon.
Adam
Gadon.
What's going on? Why did they have to? Why did my library have to get it from California and bring this little thing into my Orange County in my book?
Oh my God! You're gonna have to figure that out. I mean,
taking the book back and I'm closing the door on this.
Well, I appreciate it. I hope you don't close the door on our relationship because I really feel closer to you because of it.
Well, but now that I've read your book, man, you are out of control.
Hey, how do you feel about taking the Pledge of Allegiance out of the schools?
Oh, under God?
Yeah.
Well, that's been always my problem in life. I want God to get off from on top of me so I can live. Get off me. All right. I don't like being under God.
Brian, thanks so much, man.
Thanks, Brian.
Talk to you later.
Okay.
What a nice song he wrote there. The Hot Dogs of
Freedom. Hot Dogs of Freedom.
It's actually a line from my book because I'd run away when I was a kid. I was like 7 years old in Alaska, and my friend, this guy who had a cleft palate.
Oh, yeah.
His name was Chris. We just wandered along the inlet in Alaska for what seemed like miles, and we came upon a bridge that went out to the ocean where you could actually see like whales jumping and ice floes and stuff. And there was just these teenagers sitting there cooking hot dogs.
Yeah.
And they were like, "Do you want the rest of our hot dogs? We're taking off." So we're like, "Yeah." So me and Chris, this kid, I must have been in second grade, just sat there cooking these hot dogs by ourselves. And when you're in second grade, you're like, "Whoa." Yeah. So they were like the Hot Dogs of Freedom. That's where that comes from.
Freedom.
Yeah, and my dad.
Does your dad know about that story?
My dad, sure. He hit me when he found me. he remembers. Do you remember that, Pop? My dad's in the booth. We took off. We were gone for like the whole day, and I just remember him driving up with some cops and the other kid's parents. You know when you run away that first time? And
I know.
It causes a panic, and he just walked right up to me, grabbed me with the too tight grip.
Yeah.
Where they don't even have to hit you. You're just like, ow, ow. You know.
That's my neck.
Yeah. Do you do that? Your daughter?
No, okay. Man. My daughter's a good girl.
Oh, even good kids, you know, get beaten.
I know, but
sometimes.
No. She's never done anything that I have had to put my hands on.
That sounds like a challenge. Are you up, Vivica? I would take that as a challenge. So look, we can get into this a little bit and talk about it a little more. The report released by the EPA yesterday says that the floodwater in New Orleans is dangerously toxic and a risk to human health. In samples drawn a little over a week ago, high levels of chemicals such as hexavalent chromium, how could that be good in any way? Hexavalent chromium, arsenic, and lead. There were elevated levels of thallium, which is also detected, but according to the EPA, in terms of the thallium, not enough to harm people, but the other stuff, very bad. The tests also revealed elevated levels of E. coli and other coliform bacteria that can make people very sick, vomiting, diarrhea, stomach pain. Officials from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention joined the EPA in advising people not to wade in or drink the standing water if contact can't be avoided, to wash exposed area with soap and water. Now, Mayor Ray Nagin has said that he was waiting for these test results to determine how soon people would start returning to their homes, so I guess we'll find out. And after this, we will talk a little bit. We're going to play back a conversation we had with Hugh Kaufman, who was very upset about this because he still, I believe that he would probably be disappointed with these results because, you know, they are buffered a little bit. I do have some information on what these toxins can do to human beings, and we are going to play a little bit of the interview with Hugh Kaufman, who as I said, is a 35-year veteran of the Environmental Protection Agency. And I think it is probably, if I'm understanding his tone properly, a little worse than the information we're getting here. 15 past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
I hope you're having a decent morning. It is Thursday. We are approaching the weekend. Thank God. Is there a God? Oh, I'm going to thank him. for giving us our weekend.
There you go.
But it is only Thursday. But Friday kind of starts our weekend, so we have a good time tomorrow. We're going to go live from Elmo Restaurant tomorrow morning. If you want to come down, if you're in the New York area or you're still close enough to an airport to fly to see us, we will be down there on 7th Avenue between 19th and 20th. There's going to be coffee for you, continental breakfast, I am told, and Mark and Mark. That's me and my friend Mark Riley here. And we are going to be doing our show from there. We're going to have David Rakoff come down and be funny. He's a very funny man. David Rakoff is a very clever and witty essayist.
Yes,
and
he's very good.
A personal friend of mine. We are also going to be in Washington, D.C. next Friday. We'll be broadcasting from the XM Radio studios in D.C. If you'd like to come down, it's September 23rd. I know a lot of you going down for the big march on the 24th. Why not come by and hang out with Mark and I and Cindy Sheehan at the XM studios? You can go to morningsedition.com to get information on how to get tickets for that. Now, tomorrow, another treat, if you're going to be with us at Elmo down there on 7th Avenue between 19th and 20th, or just listening, we will be premiering, the world premiere, my friend, of Chuck D's song, Hell No, We Ain't All Right. That is going to be on our show tomorrow, so look forward to that. That's an exciting thing.
Do you think we could get cereal to give away at one of these broadcasts?
What, are we going to continue the cereal thing?
No, I'm just saying,
I'll tell you, I went out, Mark Riley's referring to a cereal frenzy I went into. I think when I get anxiety, as opposed to dealing with it like I used to, which is, smoke pot, drink, and do blow, now I go back to my childhood and I just start inhaling cold cereal. Literally, but not inhaling it in a way of like, I'm going to have some healthy cereal for my colon because I'm a grown up, but no, having the cereal and then when it runs out, there's still milk left, put more cereal in, but then not having enough milk for that cereal, then adding more milk, and then getting into that weird compulsive cereal cycle that you would do if your parents weren't watching you eat breakfast.
Anyways, I thought I was the only one that did that.
Yeah, well, no, are you kidding? Now we're going to get emails. This is the kind of thing that generates progressive emails. Dude, I'm totally on board with the cereal thing. I did that this morning. All right, here we go. Well, what we are talking about today is we are talking about the EPA report that was released yesterday that says the floodwater in New Orleans is dangerously toxic. And this is something that we knew ahead of the game. And I don't know if we had anything to do with getting this information out there, but I'll tell you, when we talked to Hugh Kaufman, who had a piece, he was interviewed in a British paper that didn't get any real play here in this country. We were like, we got to get this guy on the phone. And this is what he told us when we talked to him a couple of days ago. Is the government being honest with people about the safety of the air and water in New Orleans right now?
No, they're not. All of the oil and chemical companies that own storage tanks, facilities in that area that were flooded or impacted, are required to publish with our regional office in Dallas instantly whenever there's a release, whenever there's a breakage from pipelines, from storage tanks, refinery. The regional office, under orders, is not releasing that information to the public. And the Society of Environmental Journalists has sued EPA and the federal government to try and get that information released so the public will see the full magnitude of how much toxic material they are being exposed to in that region of the country.
So Hugh Kaufman, from the senior policy analyst from the EPA, you're telling me that they have that information, the EPA office in Louisiana has that information, and you are absolutely sure that information is horrendous, but they are keeping it under lock and key because they don't want the people to know the truth of what's really going on there on a toxic level.
That's correct, and that's why the Society of Environmental Journalists are suing under the Freedom of Information Act to try and get that information.
So the government is actively lying to the people about what is going on there, and that is their policy now.
That's the policy as of last night at 11 o'clock when I went to sleep.
And that is the policy that happened in 9/11 as well, isn't it, Hugh Kaufman?
Same policy in 9/11, that's correct. Oh, the heroes went in to try and help, were working for months in there. No respirators, no protective clothing, and now 4 years later, over 75% of those responding heroes are sick as dogs and they're starting to die off, and I'm worried that that's going to happen down the line down there. That's why there are billions of dollars of lawsuits as a result of 9/11 because of the government cover-up.
24 past the hour. Look, that was Hugh Kaufman talking to us a couple of days ago from the EPA. It's important that this information is out there. Look, the EPA has come under fire, rightfully so, because this administration has gutted it. And now it doesn't serve the people. It serves utility corporations. It serves corporate interests to compromise environmental policy so they can go on polluting. And the thing about that is that when you have a situation like Louisiana where you have a Republican administration looking to make their image seem better, they want to move people back in there as quickly as possible. And we want people to be in their homes as quickly as possible. But the bottom line is this water is dangerous. There are chemical pollutants in it that can cause, you know, long-term effects such as, you know, stroke and kidney disease, cancer. There can be, you know, that's just from lead poisoning. And apparently the thallium that is in the water can cause, you know, can cause changes in blood chemistry, damage to the liver and kidney and intestinal and even the testicular tissues, hair loss. There, you know, this hexavalent chromium. This is not this is dangerous stuff that's there. Can cause perforation of the nasal septum within a week of exposure. Can cause ulcers. You know, this is dangerous stuff, and we don't even know if we're getting the full information. But what we do know is that the administration and the EPA is not going to be able to whitewash this. And we're hoping that Senator Ray Nagin, you know, stays on top of this.
No, Mayor.
Mayor, I'm sorry, Mayor Ray Nagin stays on top of this to you know, to really keep keep people safe and to not allow people in there until it is safe.
Well, you know, the EPA, despite saying that the air is not that bad and, you know, there are some pollutants in the water, they say that anyone trying to return to their homes and businesses in the wake of the cleanup and in the wake of the mayor saying it's okay,
yeah,
still have to worry about being exposed to life-threatening hazards. And this is the one that a lot of people aren't paying attention to. Leaking natural gas. They have not sealed up all of these gas pipes all throughout the city of New Orleans. You light a match, you're liable to go up.
That's right. And if you're exposed to this water, you have to wash with soap and, you know, you have the flood water. You're supposed to wash with soap and water. And I heard that Sean Penn is actually down there with a private bather, that there's a guy that holds Sean Penn's shotgun and also, like, you know, pulls him aside and washes him thoroughly.
Yeah.
You can't get pictures of that because they're not letting photographers in, except for Sean Penn's private photographer. Anyways, it's 27 past the hour. We're going to be back. We got Bruce Cherry just walked in. He's got his picture of the week. We got Morning Sedition Radio Theater. Stay with us. 27 past the hour. I hope you're having a reasonable Thursday morning. It is the beginning of the rest time for me in my head. Stay with us.
Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Now, the Morning Sedition old-time radio players present this installment of Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
This week, newsman Wayne Gilman stars as the slickest, coolest private dick ever to move to the suburbs with his sister and her two young children in Make Room for News Daddy.
Uncle News Daddy, can you tell us a bedtime story?
I sure can. Once upon a time, there was me and two foxy young ladies.
Wayne, don't you dare tell those kids that story.
Can a hardcore private eye adjust to life in the burbs?
I told you punks not to walk across my lawn. Now you're going to get a lesson News Daddy style.
Ow! Ow! Ow!
Be there for all the heartwarming fun.
Ice cream,
all
man.
Right.
Yeah, ice cream, man. Ice cream, yeah.
Ice cream.
Wait, he's driving away.
He ain't going nowhere. Get your uncle a rocket pot.
Mister, can I get my ball out of your yard?
Make your move, sucker.
This has been Make Room for News Daddy on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
There you go. That's Wayne Gelman, News Daddy, man. Great performance.
Yeah.
35 past the hour. It's Mark Merrill and Mark Riley here on Morning Sedition.
Yep.
In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Andrew Niccol and Eamon Walker. The movie's premiering tonight, The Lord of War, the Nicolas Cage movie, and this is one of the stars, and this is... This is the director. It's Wayne Gelman. What did you miss it, Wayne?
I heard most of it this time. But it was such a sterling performance.
I thought it was tremendous.
You know, my family would be, touched by the experience.
I think we've got a reel-to-reel we can make a tape for you.
And I'd appreciate that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you can send it home with you and you can play it for your
family.
But right. Sure thing, Marin. Whatever you say. No, it was a great job. It was very funny.
Thank you very much.
Nice to see you. You all right?
Right here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you look good, man. You got the Johnny Cash look going on.
Yeah, color coordinated, all in black today.
Yeah, it's good, man. Right. It's good.
Colored and coordinated.
All right. As many of you know, these guys are going forever.
Yeah, we don't want to stop.
As many of you know, one of our writers, Bruce Cherry, has been trying to get a regular character on the show. So far, he's pitched as Bernard the Credulous Pirate, Corky Throat, Shenanigans the Clown, and a weekly phone call from an extinct marsupial. 866-303-2270 is our number if you want to give feedback immediately after Bruce Cherry's new pitch. Obviously, the results have been interesting, but he's still trying to come up with something. And right now, we welcome back writer Bruce Cherry for Bruce Cherry's Pitch of the Week.
The results have been well received.
Yeah,
it was the way the script was written. It was edited.
I heard that you talked to one person that liked you.
I get approached on the street. many people.
That's a guy.
There was one person who was particularly effusive.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
And it was a guy. There's no...
They recognize you from the voice and the sideburns, I guess, because I mentioned the sideburns. There's very few people that are sporting the type of sideburns that you have at your age with your color hair, which is gray.
Yeah, me and Martin Van Buren, I believe.
you do have a Martin Van Buren thing going on. So what do you got?
Okay. High concept. That's a show business term, right?
Okay,
everything is distilled into two words.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the two words for this one. Homophobic pixies.
Homophobic pixies.
Where does this tie in to the general gestalt of your political thing?
Yeah.
Okay, it's like it's sort of a reference to people that go against their best interests, like log cabin Republicans.
Okay.
Black conservatives, both of them. See, I worked a joke.
Yeah, that's right. It's a joke. There's a beat. Yeah.
You know how the working class votes for Republicans, blah, blah, blah. Okay, there's your topicality.
Okay.
Here's your funny. Let's go to the script, okay?
Okay, I'm reading the script
now.
You got
it funny. Here we go.
I'm ready to go. Next, we have some very special in-studio guests. Please welcome Pixies.
Hey, thanks a lot, Comedy Boy. Nobody is supposed to see or hear Pixies, so we feel pretty safe doing your show.
That's quite amusing. That's quite amusing.
Oh, man.
You know, when we booked you guys, we thought that you were the Pixies.
Yeah, so do a lot of people. We're booked to play Mohegan Sun this weekend.
All right, don't you think that the audience is going to be a little disappointed?
Not when they hear the killer version of Monkey Gone to Heaven we worked up. We gave it a reggae feel.
So, wait, let me get this straight. You think you've improved the song?
It's called Sprinkling It With Pixie Dust, loser.
Okay, let me interrupt just for... You see, the funny part is the voices.
Yeah, very funny.
Like, everything I've done, let me point this out, everything I've done, Bernard the Credulous Pirate had the funny pirate sound, the marsupial had the Scooby-Doo, it's all tailored to radio.
Right, and I get to engage with the funny voices. It's like working with the chipmunks.
I know.
It's terrific.
Going crazy.
So let me, when you're
back,
not...
Back to script.
Okay, I'm sorry. Here we go.
For the listeners.
Yeah, so when you're not masquerading as an iconic rock band, you guys are what, like some kind of fairies?
Whoa, hold on. Just a minute. Fairies? We ain't no damn fairies.
All right, no disrespect, guys, but you have pointed ears, you wear green caps, and those little pointy shoes.
You see wings, smart guy? We're impish, all right? The similarity stops there. We don't care what other woodland sprites do, but for us, the fairy lifestyle is unnatural.
Unnatural? You're all supernatural beings by definition.
Look, you can be a nymph and not be a freak. We make milk go bad, okay? We're not threatening children to believe in us or we'll die. It's sick, I tell you.
Hey, Mark. This is Mark Riley. Let me just interject. Totally on my own, that this is a very powerful piece. It really holds a mirror up to society, and it does so with verve and panache. Panache? I don't talk this way.
Okay, I think what Riley's trying to say is he really likes it.
No, I'm not sure he did try to say that. Bruce, I think he was trying to say that it felt a little stilted and weird. And
I think he was kind of overcome by his adoration of the piece and therefore talked in a rather stilted manner.
Yeah, but wait, where does this go, Bruce? I got to talk.
You know what? There was one mistake I realized in this when we were actually doing it is that I forgot to write myself into it, except for the narrator. Next time I'll play the Pixies.
So you're going to play all the Pixies, and every week the Pixies have a new issue? I don't see where this bit is going. I don't know if it's going to fly, man.
It repeats. That's the core of comedy.
Well,
repetition.
Let's talk to James, who's calling in. James, what do you think of the Pixie bit?
Hey, I'm struggling with this. I'm trying to
determine in my mind which one is more lame, this one or Wayne Gelman News Day.
At least they're attacking other people's bits now.
Have you been following the history of News Daddy, James?
No, I have not.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so maybe if you knew the evolution of that character, you would have more appeal. But you're voting no on the Pixies.
I'm voting no on the Pixies.
Okay, thank you for your call, James.
We could double track the voice.
So it's a chorus of Pixies?
Yeah.
So like they're singing Pixies? Maybe like maybe there could be a Pixies bit where there's the Mormon Tabernacle Choir Pixies.
We didn't have a lot of production time. We could actually work in the Monkey Gone to Heaven, the little background might be nice.
Hey, we got Chris in Iowa. Chris, what do you think of the Pixies?
Hey there.
Yeah.
Hey.
I figured you out.
Well, okay, what's Bruce?
Bruce is a Republican spy trying to bring down the funny level of the show. He's a bomb. He's a bomb. And he's blowing up in the show.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
All right, Chris.
Cherry bomb.
No, but I might point out to the regular listeners that these people are plants.
No, they're not plants. That guy was in Iowa. Why would we plant? You think?
Yeah, if you're going to make up a state, what's it going to be?
Iowa.
Yeah, you
know. But we didn't make that up. That guy's a real guy, and he actually did a little. He surprised himself that he was funny at the end. He was a cherry bomb.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not gonna. Don't be upset.
I'm not upset because I realize the quality of the stuff that's been.
Are you about to?
I'm not crying.
Are you sure? I'm a little choked up. It'd be funny if you could cry in Pixie sound.
Wait, Kalo, hit the Pixie voice again. Any bit.
Not when they hear the killer version of Monkey Gone to Heaven we worked up. We gave it a reggae feel.
That's humor.
Let's talk Dave in Seattle. Dave is up late. What's up, Dave?
Hey, Dave.
Hey, I got the worst comment ever on the Pixies. It sounds a lot like something one hears on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh!
You're baiting me.
Wait a minute. Just for the listeners, Stephanie Miller would be the woman that preempts you on most of the West Coast. Just to give a little background.
Also cause you guys, they trim an extra hour off Morning Edition.
Morning Sedition. Wait, you're in Seattle, so you're a victim of this programming decision.
In a way, because I'm one of the few people who's up early enough to hear you guys live.
Right.
I was proselytizing the show. You guys, I was like advocates telling everyone, oh, you know, they hear what time is on. And I even wrote the station and said, hey, there'll be a great drive time show. So that shows you what I know about radio, so maybe the Pixies are actually great.
Right.
That's a man with a little bit of
I'm not sure what just happened. Did he insult me or no?
He used the word proselytizing, so you immediately dismiss everything he says.
But, how's the new programming, all right?
I think he's gone.
Oh, is he? That's all right. All right, Dave. Well, thanks for calling. I'm not sure whether he insulted me or what, but I'm not going to take the bait on the Stephanie Miller thing, because I think there is room for everybody under the great progressive umbrella of radio shows, even if it's in the middle of the night.
Bruce, is this really Mark Miller?
Some people call me jealous, Bruce. You know what? Some people say I'm jealous, and those people would be right, my friend. Go ahead.
You're driven by jealousy.
I'm telling you. Here's what I'm going to tell you right now.
Hatred and angst.
Here's what I'm going to tell you right now, my friend. All right? The Pixie bit, I don't think, is going to fly.
Okay. I think I know why. You're afraid that homophobic Pixies is going to offend the gay community, right?
No.
Here's a twist.
What?
Racist brownies.
What?
Racist brownies. Now, okay.
You see what I did?
I saw you. You
turned it on its head.
That's amazing. You're fired. No, I'm kidding. No, come in with the racist brownies or whatever you want to come in with next week, and we'll work through this, because I think that we're going to hit something, Bruce. This is going to happen for you.
People love the pirate.
Yeah, they love the pirate. They love you, Bruce.
That was like 5 bits ago, though.
We'll be back.
You know, there's a backlog of pieces that can be used.
Bruce will be back next week with another idea. In just a few minutes, we're going to talk to Andrew Niccol and Eamon Walker, who also played Kareem Saeed on Oz. He's in the new film, Lord of War. We're going to talk to them about that in just a minute.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
For 49 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
I want to thank that guy in Seattle for calling. I don't know how I misconstrued that as an insult because I'm an insecure idiot. Folks, we'll be broadcasting live from Elmo Restaurant tomorrow morning. We'll have author David Rakoff, activist Jeremy Gilley, plus our Beltway odds maker, Johnny K Street, all live in person. Elmo is on 7th Avenue between 19th and 20th. We'll be there from 6 to 9 with a continental breakfast and some coffee,
right? That's right. Continental breakfast, coffee, be there. It's always a lot of fun.
We're now joined by two guests in studio. You know Eamon Walker from the HBO series Oz. He played Nation of Islam leader Kareem Saeed. Most recently, he played Mark Antony alongside Denzel Washington and Julius Caesar on Broadway. And Andrew Niccol is the director behind such films as Gattaca and The Truman Show. They both join us in studio this morning to discuss their latest film, Lord of War, which opens tomorrow nationwide. Welcome, fellas.
Hi. Hello.
Good morning. How are you?
I saw the movie. I liked the movie. It was beautifully shot. It was compelling. My question to you, Andrew, first, is when you conceived of it, Nicolas Cage starts talking to the camera immediately, which to me is a comedic device, yet the film doesn't really play out as a dark comedy all the way through, but there are definitely comedic elements in it.
I actually thought it was subversive, that it was almost like a how-to movie on arms dealing. It's almost like how to be a gun runner.
So that is what it is about. Yeah. Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about the what the movie is about? That'd be a good way to start this.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage plays an international arms dealer. He's being pursued by Ethan Hawke's character, who's an Interpol agent.
So the how-to element is what makes it sort of... Because I thought, like, right at the beginning, just because, you know Nicolas Cage, and you know when he's sort of being kind of sarcastic, that it was definitely comedic. The whole opening, I don't want to give away the opening montage because it was very compelling.
Right.
It's a high point of the movie for me, actually, just that whole thing following that.
Yeah, I mean, you're not giving away too much. It's the lifespan of a bullet,
basically. Yeah, that's exactly it. And now, Eamon, I've watched you on Oz many times, and this role seems to... is an insidious, almost obviously evil character. I mean, that must have been pretty appealing.
Well, I didn't play him as evil. I mean, he might be evil to you, but I see him as misunderstood.
It's one of the things I really liked about it, actually, is that this guy is a mass murderer, but he always feels persecuted and acts as if he's being persecuted.
He's the self-declared leader of Liberia. You were able to avoid some of the stereotypes that come along with playing the slightly crazy tyrant dictator of a country.
Oh, that's his writing. His writing is amazing, and his sense of humor is slightly, you know, off warped to the side. His words, not mine. So, I mean, that's what I loved about the script when I read it, and that's what I loved when I met him, you know, and all the research and the work was all there, and I just knew I wanted to be a part of it for that very reason.
Question to the two of you. There is sometimes a cost to be paid for portraying Africa in a negative light. You know, there are a lot of Afrocentrics, certainly in the United States, who have a particular view of the continent and really get upset when something is portrayed that is contrary to that view. Did you take that into account at all in structuring this character?
I'm concerned that Africa is not portrayed in any light. I mean, there are so many... I mean, it took so long for there to be a movie about Rwanda. Mm-hmm. I talk to people, you know, soon after that genocide occurred, and, you know, people didn't want to touch that. For years and years, there's no movie. And just recently, with Constant Gardner and this movie, Lord of War, there's at least some light being shed on that continent.
Now, was this character based on a real character? The Nicolas Cage character of Yuri Orlov?
He's based sort of on... he's a composite character of about five different arms dealers.
And how did you know these arms dealers?
It's hard to get the most notorious of these guys on the phone.
Yeah.
But
the ones that are still working, you
mean? Yes. But, you know, it was very surprising to me what access I could get to these guys in the logistical making of the film. I mean, there's a scene in the film where I have 50 Soviet tanks, and these all belong to one arms dealer. A private arms dealer in the Czech Republic. And he said, it's fine, you can use these for your movie, but I need them back by December because I'm selling them to Libya.
Oh, my God.
Which is exactly what Libya needs, of course, is 50, you know, Soviet tanks.
That reminds me of that story of Coppola shooting Apocalypse Now, where he borrowed the, what were they, the Filipino Army's
the helicopters.
They needed them to quell a guerrilla action in the middle of shooting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Eamon Walker, who'd you have in mind when you were doing your version of the...
I had several people in mind. I looked at most of the African leaders who we've had, Idi Amin, for instance, and Charles Taylor, and lots of different people who you would consider, bearing in your mind, evil. And I would turn around and say,
"Yeah, I'm alone in
misunderstood."
That. Yeah, I mean, I'm one of the few people that consider Idi Amin evil.
No villain, though, I guess, thinks of themselves as a villain.
Yeah, you don't get Borm thinking, I'm going to be a really bad person.
Well, I thought that was what was really interesting about both your character and Nicolas Cage's character was that they didn't necessarily see themselves as being evil. And even though Nicolas Cage was presented constantly with the moral sort of issue of what he does, there was this strange rationalization, almost a kind of socio-biological rationalization, like, hey, if we don't kill him, if I don't facilitate it, someone's going to facilitate it,
right.
And they're going to die. They're almost here to die. So what are you getting? You know, what are you getting on my back for?
Right, but I find that he sort of has an interesting rationale, as you say, because he would, you know, you would say to him, you know, you're responsible for tens, hundreds of thousands of deaths, and he would say, I'm responsible for no death because I don't pull the trigger. Mm. You pull the trigger. And I'm just supplying a demand.
And in the relationship that Nicolas Cage has with the Ian Holm character in the film, and he's like the old school, old guard arms dealer that's run the arms around the planet for so long, and Nicolas Cage plays the young gun, so to speak.
Right.
And the way that thing goes down, and I certainly don't want to give that away, but that was, there was a couple of scenes in the film, the kind of weird, drugged out, dreamy sequence thing, and the scene with Ian Holm and Eamon Walker, which is nuts. That scene.
You like that?
No, I love that scene because that's where it really comes down to, you know, what is good, what is evil, who are you, what are you made out of, what are you willing to do to be my friend, and what are the costs of not being my friend?
Exactly.
And that's one of those great cathartic moments in a movie where the character really, that was his test. And you know, and I'm just going to say this to the audience: he passed the test. And I'm not going to say good or evil. You're going to have to go see the film to judge that on your own. Yeah. All right, the film is Lord of War, which opens tomorrow nationwide. I want to thank Andrew Niccol, the director, and Eamon Walker, one of the stars, for being with us. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for being here.
Great to have them in the studio here. I am not going to talk about movies on the air as much because I've made mistakes in talking about movies in the past, Riley.
What did you do? Give away the ending?
Yes, I've done that before, and I'm not going to do it again. You know, coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to talk to James Traub. He is a guy that spent a lot of time with Bono, which to some people may sound great. To me, I don't know. I think that would get draining after a while. But he is going to discuss Bono as a diplomat and why he has such access in the world. We've got a product placement minute coming up in a little while. My buddy Neil Strauss, who wrote one of the early articles of the New York Times on alternative comedy when I was involved in that a few years back, has written a book about the game, the secret society of pickup artists, and apparently it's a system, Riley.
I took notes.
Yeah. For what? For when you screw up your marriage?
Yeah, that's it.
Planning ahead?
No, yeah. I'm trying to tell my wife.
All right, so we'll be back with all that. It's 57 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Blah, 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 blah. 6 past the hour. Good morning. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. How you doing, Mark?
All right.
Hey, you know where we're going to be tomorrow?
Where?
I'm going to tell the people. We'll be broadcasting live from Elmo Restaurant tomorrow morning. We'll have author David Rakoff, activist Jeremy Gilley. Plus, we're going to have our own Johnny K Street there live in person. Elmo's on 7th Avenue between 19th and 20th. We'll be there tomorrow morning from 6 to 9 a.m. We'll be premiering Chuck D's new song, Hell No, We Ain't All Right. Tomorrow, that's the world premiere of that song. We also, before we talk to our guest, James Traub, about Bono, let's I want to report to you. We got a call from a woman in Biloxi, Mississippi. That's in Harrison County. That was incredibly damaged by the hurricane. She works for the government. Didn't want to talk on the phone. Told us that FEMA won't open an office in Harrison County because the county doesn't have the things they require to open an office, i.e., a 500-room office building with ramps, maybe a few other things. I mean, obviously, there's probably FEMA people down there, but they won't set up a control center because of bureaucracy, because of complications, because there's these protocols.
500 rooms? They only got 2,600 employees.
It's like it's BS, Riley. You know, it's BS. It just shows that, you know, this is all about how they've got it structured on paper, and it doesn't apply to the people.
It's incredible.
Mm. Well, look, right now let's have a conversation with it. I don't want him to sit here too long.
I'm quite comfortable.
Okay,
there you go.
One man has persuaded the leaders of the free world to commit billions in aid to Africa and sold millions of records at the same time. Bono, the lead singer of U2, is the subject of this Sunday's New York Times Magazine cover story. The author of that piece joins us now. He's a contributing writer to the New York Times Magazine. Good morning, James Straub.
Morning, Mark.
So morning.
You spend a lot of time with Bono, which on some level I think I would eventually get annoyed. But you did go to Davos. You did go to the G8 summit in Scotland with him, and you saw him in action. What surprised you about this guy?
Well, first of all, how annoyed can you get hanging around fabulous hotels and, you know, having cocktails? And
let me explain to you. If it's not about me, it becomes a little tedious.
Well, then you're going to have to just hang around with yourself. My living makes me talk about other people, and I have to say I never had more fun in my entire professional life.
Wow, can I pitch you a story? I am going to be in San Francisco in a couple weeks.
What hotel, Mark? Are you going to make it worth my while?
What did you do?
If it's the YMCA dorm, I'm not interested.
Well, that's all Air America will pay for.
But sorry.
But it's a grittier piece of what I'm pitching to you.
But so I'm 50 now. I don't do the gritty pieces. Okay. I'm in my glide path towards retirement, and I do nice hotels.
Uh-huh. So where did you stay? What did you do? What made it so exciting?
Well, actually, what makes it so exciting is that when the first time I met the guy mm-hmm. was at Davos. You know, Davos is where they have this thing, the World Economic Forum, mm-hmm. where every powerful person from every walk of life comes. So it's a very heady environment. And, you know, U.S. senators walk around unescorted. It's nice. You can kind of walk up to, you know, Joe Biden or Orrin Hatch and have a little chat. In this setting, this guy, Bono, is everybody else's superstar.
Right.
He, wherever he goes, everybody wants to touch him, talk to him,
hang out.
In fact, Orrin Hatch, right-wing senator from Utah, when he saw me, walks over, wraps him in a big hug, and says, "Bono, where you been? We've got business to do. I need you, man." Or they try to say man or something kind of cool.
He sounds like a roadie.
They are all a roadie compared to Bono. It's really quite heady.
And Bono is a guy that's just loaded to the brim with charisma, and I'm sure he's walking around in his glasses and his cowboy boots, and he must make quite an impression to anybody in this environment.
He does, though. It's in part because he is kind of always the same. Mm-hmm. I mean, he doesn't, you know, condescend to unimportant people. He doesn't too overtly suck up to big people. Part of the charisma is that sense there's something incorruptible about him, for all that he's incredibly rich and famous, all the other things that lead to the corruption of one's soul. He doesn't seem corrupted, and so people are also attracted to whatever that inner core of
Bono-ness.
The thing that I've always been fascinated by in reading about Bono's work is that he really is, on a certain level, nonpartisan. Orrin Hatch, Jesse Helms, some of the most right-wing people in the American Congress are people that count him, apparently, as among their friends. Where does the political end and the personal begin with this man?
Well, that's a question that he thinks about a lot, because I think his answer would be, it's not that he's nonpartisan, that is to say that he doesn't have views. It's that his goal is to push something across a finish line, that is to say, increasing aid or more debt relief or whatever it is. And he is willing to completely suppress whatever his own personal preferences are in order to get that thing there. And so you will never hear him, for example, criticize Bush on the Iraq war, because it's not part of the thing he's trying to do. So why would he alienate somebody whom he's trying to help? in the course of my writing this article, he was very upset that I might say something that might, for example, upset Condoleezza Rice, because his concern is working with her. And he would say, if I wrote an article that was utterly celebratory of him but pissed off the Bush administration, that would be bad.
Uh-huh.
So part of it is this very kind of diplomatic calculation. Another part of it, though, was that he reaches people, or he finds a commonality with people, at some spiritual Christian level. And so people like Jesse Helms feel a sense of common purpose because Bono reaches them not at the left-right ideological level, but at the scriptural level.
So he talks scripture?
With Helms, in fact, there's this wonderful story that I tell in the article that he goes to Helms to talk about debt relief, which Helms thinks, why are we bothering to take debt away from these poor countries? It's their damn fault. And so he gives him the little lecture, and Helms is sitting there politely saying nothing, and he realizes he's not getting through. And so then he begins citing scripture, and he says, do you know, Jesse, that there are more passages in the Bible about helping the poor than about any other subject save for one's own spiritual salvation? And he talks about leprosy, and he says, you know, AIDS is the leprosy of today, and we need to help these countries. Well, by the end, Helms is so moved that his eyes are welling up with tears, allegedly not crying, but welling up with tears. And, you know, at this point he's quite shaky physically, so he staggers up out of his seat with the aid of his cane. He comes over to Bono, and he wraps him in a hug, and he says, I want to give you a blessing. And he does. And everybody else sitting there thought, what in the world has just happened?
Yeah, that would be Jesse Helms seeing the light at the end of his tunnel and reaching out to the rock star in his last moments. But now, how much of Bono, how much of his ideology is based in his religious beliefs?
I think he would probably say that he has less of an ideology than he does a kind of core of, whether religious or spiritual, mm-hmm. I'm not sure how he would characterize it. He has a classically liberal ideology. I mean, on most issues, you'd find that he's kind of a down-the-line, you know, left person. But I do think that because the whole thing is undergirded mm-hmm. by a set of Christian principles. I mean, he still goes to church himself, and his children are enrolled in the Episcopalian Church, mm-hmm. Irish version of Episcopalian Church in Dublin. That there is a kind of solidity to those beliefs, which make them something a little different from an ideology.
Hmm. Now, how well informed do you find Bono to be in terms of knowing what's going on in policy, global policy, American policy, you know, European policy? I mean, is this a guy that gets briefed every morning?
Yeah, you know, if a rock star can actually, you know, recite to you more than like 12 states in the union, you think, wow, that's pretty good. Now, here's a guy who actually, when he talks to an undersecretary of the Treasury, he can speak at more or less at close enough to that person's level that there's no element of condescension. So he is extremely conversant with some very technical issues that have to do, for example, with debt. But beyond that, he also understands people's political constraints. He says, I know you can't do that. You can't do that, but maybe you can do this.
Right.
And that's very appealing to those guys.
You know,
it seems to me that in order to pull this off, Bono has to convince the people that he's dealing with that he's not really in any of this for himself. He's not in it for the money. He's not in it for the power. And he doesn't seem to want what they have. How in the world does somebody pull that off?
Well, because it's true. I mean, this may be naive on my part. I mean, I think that, you know, when you already have all the wealth in the world and all the fame in the world, it's easier in a way to persuade people that you're not in it for the wealth and the fame. It's kind of like Mike Bloomberg, you know, mayor of New York, saying, I don't need this job. And so in Bono's case, it's not always easy to say where the, you know, satisfaction lies. What does he want out of this? Yeah. But he's not trying to sell more records by virtue of saving the world. He's selling a lot of records as it is.
Does he want to be a politician?
You know, I get asked that. I don't know. People say he could be a prime minister of Ireland if he wanted to, and I'm certain that's true. I think that's true. But I've never heard him say anything that implies he does.
Can we call him? Do you have his cell phone number?
You know, the funny thing is when you're that famous,
yeah.
Your cell phone number actually is held by – somebody. You get somebody else – holding the cell phone, and they hand it to him. He doesn't carry a cell phone.
So thank you, Jen Straub. The article on Bono is going to be in this Sunday's New York Times magazine, and then in a couple of weeks, maybe the piece on me in San Francisco.
But think about the hotel.
Okay. All right. Well, it was great talking to you. In a few minutes, we're going to have the product placement minute. Stay with us for that. It's 16 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Attention, mis hermanos and mis hermanas. This is Pendejo. ¡Viva la revolución! You're listening to Mark and Mark on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We'll be at Elmo Restaurant tomorrow on 7th Avenue between 19th and 20th. A lot of fun. We got free coffee, continental breakfast, and we're going to be letting you hear the world premiere of Chuck D's new song. Chris, you got a taste?
Don't y'all know they said it's a state of emergency. So somebody's government is far from reality. Somebody's government is far
sounds
from
like
reality.
Classic Chuck to me, man. Don't give him too much.
That's dope right. Beats.
Don't, yeah, exactly. Don't give him too much, because now people are going to be like, hey, what the? That's right, tomorrow.
That's
how do you
right.
Like that? Hey, we got another call from management saying this show has to make more money. So that we don't have to steal urinal cakes from the advertising firm downstairs. So now it's time once again for the Morning Sedition Product Placement Minute. So, Riley, what's our story today?
Well, Mark, I thought we'd explore what's been going on in Ukraine. Because while we've been wound up in Hurricane Katrina, the president of the Ukraine has had to fire, basically, the government.
Wow, the whole government.
Just about. He fired his prime minister and accepted the resignation of Petro Poroshenko from the Security and Defense Council. Four other top officials had already stepped down in one short week.
Uh-huh. And why are you scraping your whole body with a rock?
It's not a rock. It's a moon volcanic pumice stone, Mark. Ideal for sanding down calluses and removing rough, dead skin cells. The Ukrainian government began breaking up after allegations of corruption, even though this government entered office on a reform platform.
Wow, sounds like a complicated issue. Maybe we should break it down for our listeners.
Sure will, Mark. The moon volcanic pumice stone is handcrafted from carbon-based volcanic rocks to fit perfectly in the palm of your hand. Right after bathing or showering, you wet the stone like so, then softly rub the natural pumice stone block over the affected area. For instance, this thick callus right here.
Oh, man, look at that thing. How'd you get a callus in a place like that anyway?
Don't know. Woke up with it. But look at how it sands down.
Wow, smooth as a baby's bottom.
Yushchenko is the Ukrainian president who survived dioxin poisoning during his election. He came to office a mere 7 months ago, promising to end corruption. But last week, his vice prime minister left office, accusing others of corruption, and Yushchenko's popularity has already been going down the tubes anyway.
Huh, that's terrible. And why are you scraping down there?
It feels good.
Oh, so what comes next?
Well, parliamentary elections are still 6 months away, and it looks like Yushchenko could be running against the prime minister he just fired.
No, I mean, what's next with the pumice stone?
Taking it home to be alone with it.
Well, thanks, Riley. That's today's Morning Sedition Product Placement Minute. Wow. Ooh. Hey, I like those, and they should actually be sending us money. All those companies, we're doing them a favor.
That's right. I got a pedicure and massage just the other day.
And I'm starting to talk in the radio voice, because I put on the radio voice.
Hey!
Yeah, it's the radio voice.
Spinning the platters that matter.
That's right. I've been told that I'm going to get free LASIK surgery. When's that going to happen?
Uh-oh.
I'm going to do it, man. If they offer it to me, I'm going to do it.
I think about it. Man, I don't know if I want anything near my eyes like that.
I know. That's what some people are freaking out. They're like, they're lasers in your eyes. What if something goes wrong? But I'll tell you, I'm a little sick of wearing glasses, and it would be kind of cool, given that there is a success rate that I imagine is, probably respectable.
99.999%, like DNA, right?
It'd be kind of interesting to wake up and go, I can see right, wouldn't it? So I think we got a couple minutes here. Now, Congressman Anthony Weiner conceded to Freddie Ferrer.
Fernando Ferrer, yeah, this is complicated.
And he had like a 39, Ferrer was at 39.9%. He was a tenth of a way, but he might have won, or he might still have to have a runoff because it's mandated.
Here's the quick deal. deal on this. Ferrer got 39.949. He needed 40% to avoid a runoff. There are 8,200 absentee ballots, which, when counted, could spell no runoff. But as of right now, even though Anthony Weiner has dropped out and given his support to Fernando Ferrer, under state, not city, state law, there has to be a runoff.
Okay, so there might still be a runoff. That's what we're getting at here.
There might still be a runoff. We'll probably know by Monday or Tuesday.
If no runoff, Wiener's just going to get on Ferrer's bandwagon and campaign for Ferrer.
Campaign for Ferrer and try and knock down that double-digit lead. I think it's a double-digit lead almost that Bloomberg has over Ferrer in the latest polling before the election.
So it's safe to assume that Anthony Weiner is looking to his future political career here.
Well, yeah, and it's a smart move on his part. He's already a sitting congressman. He didn't have to give up his seat in order to make the run in the first place. He goes back to Washington for another couple of years or so, wins another election, comes back to New York, and runs in 09.
Okay, got it. So this guy who we're going to be talking to in a few minutes, Neil Strauss, is a writer I've known for a few years, and I'm telling you, he is no Casanova. I mean, you know, he's a thin kind of... No, unless something dramatically has changed since I last saw him, but he's written this book about the game, the secret society of pickup artists, you know, that he infiltrated. And I'm very curious to see, you know, just how that pans out for young Neil.
You know, I tried some of this stuff on my wife after I looked at a couple of chapters in the book. I got slapped for my trouble. But what are you going to do?
The book is fascinating because it's literally bound like a Bible.
Yeah.
I mean,
gold leaf and everything.
I believe it was Judith Regan who published this book, and the gimmick is, you know, that, you know, it's a sacred text. So, there's gold leaf and it's leather bound. And I was trying to think for myself if I have if I've been an active pickup artist in my life. And I would have to, you know, I don't know if I ever went out just, you know, specifically to pick up anybody, but I think I have.
I've never been good at it, so I've kind of come from the opposite direction. It's like, hi, don't talk to me.
It helps if they like me, I find.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's 27 past the hour. We will talk to Neil Strauss in just a few minutes about this book, this gilded book. So stay with us for that. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
next week, next Friday, we're going to be in Washington. We're doing the show live from the XM radio stage studios in D.C. That's Friday, September 23rd. That's the day before Greenfest and the big anti-war rally. So I know some of you cats are going to be down there. If you want to come to the XM studios, we're going to be in their performance venue. We're going to have Cindy Sheehan there with us, and I'm sure a lot of other guests. So if you want to get involved with that, if you want to get tickets to that, you got to go to MorningSedition.com to enter and win a free pair of tickets. And tomorrow we'll be at Elmo Restaurant on 7th Avenue between 19th and 20th. We're going to have David Ratcoff, Jeremy Gilley. He's an activist. He's done a film project. Comedian Mishna Wolf is going to be there. And Continental Breakfast, Riley.
Continental Breakfast, including, of course, Bran Flakes?
Maybe. Our next guest was an ordinary journalist until he spent 2 years studying under the best pickup artists in the world. By the time the masters were done with him, he was so good, he got Britney Spears' phone number. And I know this guy, and that's surprising. No insult to you. His new book is called The Game, Penetrating the Secret Society of Pickup Artists, and he joins us now in the studio. How you doing, Neil Strauss? Nice to see you again.
Hey, Mark. Good to be here.
It's been a while. I cannot believe it. When I get this book, and they're like, Neil, I'm like, I know Neil from years ago. That guy almost got Britney Spears' phone number.
That's why I learned this stuff, because I was that guy.
And I think many people would mistake you as that guy now. Not to mention he has gold glittery shoes on, which might might make the difference. But tell me and Mark about now the secret society. Is this a real secret society, or is just a bunch of guys?
No, it's amazing, and it changed my life because I was always the guy who was in the friend zone.
Yeah,
like the guy. My whole life in New York, and you know this.
Yeah.
I'd finally meet a girl after months and months and months. My opening line would be like, "What's the opening act?"
Uh huh.
You know, or where's Houston Street?
Yeah.
Oh.
And that was it. That's where it ended.
Or every now and then I'd get her alone in my house and get what they call the LJBF speech, the let's just be friends.
Oh.
You work up the guts to make the move and you get totally shafted.
I was always a guy that generally, I don't think I had a lot of trouble with women in my past, but it wasn't that, rarely did I go chase them down.
Right.
I would find the one that liked me, and there you go.
That's pretty much the way it went for me.
That's the thing. Most women choose the guys, even the good-looking guys. So I found the secret society, and what it is all over the world, there are these so-called lairs where guys meet to discuss tips and tactics for meeting women. Then they go out into what they call the field, the bars and clubs, and they try them out.
So these guys that you met, these guys in this secret society, you're a sophisticated person, intelligent
person. I like to think so.
a guy with a decent heart. Were these good fellas?
Here's the thing. There were good fellas and there were bad guys.
Okay.
And the good guys tend to do better than the bad guys because women have this thing called intuition that we don't have.
Uh-huh.
And they can weed it out. But the thing that the good guys were always being nice guys at first. I was the guy who was painting the woman's apartment while she went out on a date. Someone just reminded me of that.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. Did you really do that?
I really did that. And now I see the Matrix. Everything's changed. And it's all totally counterintuitive.
Huh. Really?
Yeah.
Now, what was the success rate of this society of pickup artists?
I hate to give numbers, but really, when I got good at this, I can't even believe I'm saying this, but it would be if I met someone and I started talking, it would always open up. 100%, we'd get into the conversation. 90% chance I'd get the phone number and she returned the call, and we'd get to see each other again.
Open up. Now you're using a lingo here.
Not using lingo. There's a whole language. They have their own secret language.
Like what? Like open up is?
Like an opener is what you do to open a set. A set is a group of people.
Okay, so, a group of people.
Right.
So you walk up to, you walk into the club. Does that have a name? That's called?
The field.
We go into the field
with our openers, right. But I say as soon as you walk in the club, you instantly start talking to people. It doesn't even matter because as soon as you walk in the club, it's a performance, right? Because everyone's watching you. And the woman, the way a guy goes for whatever has, you know, long hair, thin, tan, nice breasts, that's how a guy thinks.
Yeah.
A woman looks for status.
Uh huh.
So as soon as you walk in the club, if you're, like, scoping it out, you're already lost because she's watching you looking around like a loser.
So you just sort of walk in like you own the place?
You walk in, you talk with your buddies, you're having fun, you spin off right into a set. It doesn't even matter. You're not even thinking.
I got to get some buddies.
Or forget the buddies.
Let me write this down for you. Spin into set.
For me. You're going to write it down for me. Yeah. We're a bunch of married guys.
Yeah, we're a bunch of married, monogamous guys around.
But you know what? Even if you're married, right, just to show that other women are attracted to you, can amp up that marriage, but don't show it too much.
I'll tell you, women are going to hate this segment.
But you know what?
Just another boys' club.
But you know what? Guys always blow it with the women. They sit there and they pour their hearts out on the second date and blow it. Or she could like them. Like, guys should know how to behave too to attract her. Guys are always, here's the thing. Guys are always making women uncomfortable. They'll hit on her right away.
Yeah.
Or they'll blow it. So you might as well have guys behaving correctly.
What about, what can women glean from your wisdom here?
The mind of a man.
Yeah, this
which
book
is an ugly place sometimes.
So this is an interesting book, Neil, because women are going to want to read it because they want to know what they're up against,
right,
and how they're being maneuvered and manipulated and cajoled into bad sexual situations,
right, or good ones.
So Neil, I've known you for years. I see you in front of me. You're a changed man. You don't seem that much different to me. So it must be primarily a technique thing. So let's finish with the technique.
Right,
so
now I can turn on or off. I've got a girlfriend now, so it's mostly hot.
And you got her because of the techniques you learned from your experience.
Exactly. And you know, like when you met me, I was going underground as a stand-up comic.
That's right. And part of that is you need to be brutally rejected and heartbroken at all times to be a stand-up comic.
Same thing as a pickup artist.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So do you approach with a sad story?
It's the same thing as comedy. You need a tight routine. You walk in, right?
Yeah.
It always works.
Okay.
You know
you're walking with your friends. We're in the field. You've picked your group.
Right. And here's the thing. You go in with an indirect opener. You don't hit on her.
Right.
You're not allowed to hit on a woman until she's attracted to you.
Right.
So I'm going to walk in, and you're just being the friendly guy in the bar. So
yeah.
I'll say, hey, let me get a quick opinion on something.
Oh, okay.
Right? And again, I don't walk in straight. My body language is distant. I'm almost about to leave at any second.
God, I want to have sex with you right now. This really does work.
I think I got another interview after this. So So I got to get a quick opinion on something, which is a friend of mine, this guy Mark over there, he just bought these two dogs,
yeah,
a pug and a beagle.
Yeah.
He's obsessed with the
80s. Yeah.
And he wants to name after like an 80s pop duo or group, like Duran Duran, but it's
clever.
The same name.
Yeah.
We're trying to think of a name.
Okay, so that's how you approach it, and they don't see through that. They just think like, oh, fun man wants to ask me.
And here's the key.
Yeah.
Here's like the little piece. This is why these guys are so simple, so genius.
Yeah.
As soon as a guy walks up and starts talking, the first thing you're thinking is, how do we get rid of him?
Right.
How long is this guy going to stay here?
Yeah, yeah.
So you say, I can only stay for a minute because I got to rejoin my friends over there.
Yeah.
Then they can relax and listen to you.
Oh.
That's just step one. They're like 30 steps.
Okay, all right.
Let's start it.
Let's jump. Let's cut to the chase here and how, you know, I'm going to have to read the whole damn book. but what I want to know is, so Britney Spears, I don't have a lot of respect for her, but certainly I respect some parts of her. Now, what I want to know, so you had an encounter with her? What was this?
Right. Here's what was going on. So my real life, I'm a journalist and write about music for Rolling Stone. So I was interviewing Britney Spears in the middle of kind of going through this whole period, learning at the feet of the master pickup artists.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting that standard interview. You know, you ask a question, it's just to get someone talking. You don't want no and yes answers. You don't really... I just wanted to talk and say something interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting the no, yes answer. She really didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like a block of time on her calendar.
Mm.
So suddenly I thought, you know what? I've done this game everywhere. Every country, every class of person, and it's always worked. So I just, a gear thudded in my head, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to run straight up game. And so, again, I wasn't hitting on her. The first thing, next thing you do after opening is you demonstrate value. You should show someone why you're more interested than anyone else. So I started reading her body language, telling her what that meant, and we did a little ESP kind of psychic reading, and slowly, like, I just broke through the walls, like, one by one, until she was like, let's turn off the tape deck, I want to tell you some things about me.
Britney Spears said that to
you? Yeah, I swear, and she was like this, she wanted advice and everything, she was like this lost girl going through this emotional puberty, and this was right before she got married twice, so
wow.
Clearly she was in this lost period.
Did you have sex with her?
No. Because I was writing an article, and you know what? This is my excuse, at least. My excuse is I was writing the article, so if I called her and whatever, and she didn't like the story, because I'm still going to be honest in the article.
Okay.
She would say, well, it's because this guy wanted to
get
with me. So I wanted to be above the board.
So you failed at
I
failed.
That's
you know what? I got further than I would have gotten otherwise. And I'll take that as a success.
So we have an eclectic audience. Can women use this to pick up women?
Women can use it to pick up. Oh, totally. You know what's great?
The system is the system.
Women can also use it to figure out if a guy just wants them for sex or for real.
Wow, and anyone can use this to pick up anyone.
If they practice, man. You know, it's like guitar. Anyone can learn chords, but you got to keep practicing to play it smooth.
Right, I got it. Neil, that's an upbeat ending. Neil Strauss, thank you for joining us. The book is The Game, Penetrating the Secret Society of Pickup Artists. It's nice seeing you again.
All right, later, Mark.
We'll be back in just a minute. We're going to get into the Cliff Notes. We're going to get into Radio Morning Sedition Radio Theater, and we'll give you some details about what's going on tomorrow and next Friday. It's 44 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Otasa katata matita. Hear my voice, idolaters, sucklers at the teats of beasts, and every guy named Ron in Hoboken. This is MILF Cardinal Milfington of Rapture Watch. And because I always want to know the latest on what Satan and his toad-licking minions are up to, I listen to the Morning Sedition Monday through Friday, every abdominal, look it up, from 6 to 9 a.m. here on Air America Radio.
The Morning Sedition Old Time Radio Players present this installment of Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
This week, newsman Wayne Gilman stars as the slickest, coolest private dick ever to move to the suburbs with his sister and her two young children in Make Room for News Daddy.
Uncle News Daddy, can you tell us a bedtime story?
I sure can. Once upon a time, there was me and two foxy young ladies.
Wayne, don't you dare tell those kids that story.
Can a hardcore private eye adjust to life in the burbs?
I told you punks not to walk across my lawn. Now you're going to get a lesson News Daddy style.
There for all the heartwarming fun.
Ice cream,
all
man.
Right.
Yeah, ice cream,
man.
Ice cream, yeah.
Ice cream. Wait, he's driving away.
He ain't going nowhere. Get your uncle a rocket pot.
Mister, can I get my ball out of your yard?
Make your move, sucker.
This has been Make Room for News Daddy on Morning's Edition Radio Theater.
Hey, it's 50 past the hour. Let's land this thing, folks. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
You're listening to Morning Sedition, of course. Hey, I'm pretty excited about tomorrow. We get to host the world premiere of Chuck D and Public Enemy's brand new song.
I'm down.
Hell no, we ain't all right is the name of the song. We're going to be doing that as we it's going to be during our live broadcast from Elmo. That's a restaurant down there on 7th Avenue between 19th and 20th. We're going to have David Rakoff, the very witty, urbane writer. We're going to have Jeremy Gilley, who did a very profound and incredible documentary about his plight to establish an International Peace Day. Also, we're going to have Johnny K Street. Some of our regulars are going to be there. My wife, Mishna Wolf, is going to do a little comedy. So that's going to be fun.
This ought to be quite the day tomorrow.
That's right. Ooh. And I just want to say next Friday, sorry, now I've got, it's so funny. We get this stuff that's delivered, this food's delivered every Friday, usually, but Thursday, if we got to go out of the studio, and we can't wait till the end of the show. We know we got 3 minutes, but we try to inhale the entire buffet during the break.
Yeah, so, I couldn't do it anyway. I got to go to the dentist this morning.
You're not eating none of it?
I'm not eating none. I'm saving.
What do you mean? Why would you not eat before you go to the dentist?
Because I don't want him picking sugar out of my teeth.
So you're embarrassed. You think you're dressing your teeth up?
No, this is a gum guy. So, I don't want to go, oh, look at that sugar up under. That's why your gums are so rotten. I guess I'm going to have to cut your mouth open.
So you think that if you ate that sweet roll, it would lead to surgery in your mouth?
No, it would just lead to extra time to get the sugar out of my mouth.
Okay. Because I remember
that. That was an interesting train of thought there.
Yeah.
Riley.
Why?
Yeah, we were riding the Riley train of thought there. Because you went right from sweet roll to bloody mouth.
Well.
And he's going to have to cut you open.
I'm figuring he may end up saying that anyway, but at least this way he won't have to blast the sugar out of my mouth before he says it.
That's right. Well, you know, I understand what you're saying. You don't want them to have to do extra work. You don't want to be embarrassed. You don't want them to have to look in your mouth and go, "What the hell are you eating?"
Well, you know, when you go to the doctor, you wear clean underwear. When you go to the dentist, you try not to, you know, gum up your mouth beforehand.
My mother never ever said that to me, anything about clean underwear. I was never given that advice ever. And I've heard it from many people that you got to wear clean underwear in case you die because you don't want them to take your pants off and go, oh, my God, he had dirty underpants, this dead guy.
Yeah, or have them make jokes about you.
Yeah, whatever. God forbid they make jokes about you after you're dead.
I always wonder about that. Who doesn't change their underwear every day?
I think Dan Pashman probably doesn't, if you ask him. Or was that pants? It's pants.
No, it's pants.
Oh, not underpants.
No, you got to change your underwear every day.
That must be disgusting.
Yeah, what are you talking about? Where are we now? What just happened?
Well, we're talking about dirty underpants.
All right, I just wanted to make sure I knew what show I was on. That's all. I mean, Dan Pashman doesn't attain. He said he didn't change his pants for like 3 weeks once. Isn't that right? That's disgusting because you have oils in your skin. And anyways. I'm sorry, Chris. I didn't mean to interrupt. Did you have some more insight into dirty underpants?
Well, what I was thinking, maybe if you go jogging and your underpants are getting dirty, then I guess you're screwed.
I am so happy I engaged and made sure that you finished up that conversation.
Yeah, you asked, buddy.
Yeah, I know. So next Friday, this is progressive radio at its best, by the way. Next Friday, join the Morning Sedition March on Washington. We'll be broadcasting live from the XM radio studios in D.C. If you want information on that, we're going to have Cindy Sheehan is going to be down there at the studios with us. If you want a pair of tickets, you can go to morningsedition.com and enter to win a free pair. So, Riley, I guess we should tell people, although they may not know, this is our last, officially our last day broadcasting from these studios. We're moving down to the newfangled, high-tech Air America radio studios downtown.
To the Starship.
The Starship, the mothership. And now you have been operating out of this particular venue, though, for 30 years?
It was actually about 11 years in this space. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, it was another 15 years in another space not far from here.
So. That's the old LIB.
Yeah.
And that's the studio we broadcast out of. And this we're still on LAB, and LAB is what we're still going to be on when we move.
Yes.
But it's interesting, though, because you have an entire support system here of people that you go pester right after the show.
That's right.
And
starting with Newsday.
I know. And what's going to happen when you get down to...
have to find new people to pester. Jamie Horn, watch your step.
Oh, there you go. The publicity
Carl
department.
Carl Ginsburg, lock your door.
Oh, the executives are frightened. You're going to have Riley after the show, as you're coming in for coffee, going, so what's going on?
Yeah, what's up? Tell me something.
Where are we at? So, you know, we got our own office and everything down there. It's going to be nice.
We do?
And you know, I actually won't be in the studio with you guys.
What?
At the new studios. I will be in the booth with Brendan and Dan, so you guys won't have to bother hearing me laugh and stuff.
Oh, so you won't have to, we won't have to watch you, you know, maybe surf on the internet or IM Brendan
exactly.
and Dan and have to watch them laugh to something. We don't know what they're laughing about because you guys are going, Marin's an idiot. Yeah, so now you can all just do that without me knowing that something's
Your
going on.
Your focus can be 100% on the issues.
Now, can you do like can you just throw a switch and it's like that two-way mirror thing where I actually can't see into the booth?
Oh, that'd be great.
You know he's going to be able to hear everything we say in that booth. Yeah. And we're never going to know when the mics are up or down.
So I don't understand, man. Is there any way we can keep you in the studio with us, or would you rather not be in the studio?
No, but, you know, we'll work on it. We'll see.
I don't know about this, man.
Maybe what's the matter? You guys don't want me here.
Oh, you're right.
You're right.
All right. So for those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights for what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Military commanders have been told not to fire gays until the war in Iraq is over. Observers are perplexed, saying first the military wants gays out, now they're lying about trying to make them stay in. What a bunch of drama queens. One theory why the military is using gays to bolster troop strength is that they're the only soldiers left who really are serious about staying in shape. A study says the U.S. is losing ground in education. The study does say that universities in the U.S. are among the finest in the world. Unfortunately, most students attending them are from India.
Ooh.
Michael Jackson was spotted in Dubai wearing a full-body Lycra swimsuit at a water park. Jackson rented the water park and had some changes made. All the slides for that day ended in his room. Dubai.
Ooh.
Dubai, where alleged pedophiles wearing body condoms can have lavish play dates with unsuspecting children at water parks, but women have to shroud themselves head to toe. Today's phrase, just drop this in the conversation. America's losing ground in education. Wake up, sheeple. Our kids are dumber than dirt. No, literally. Dirt was tested and had higher math scores. All right, tomorrow at Elmo's Restaurant, 7th Avenue, between 19th and 20th.
I'll
see you there, Riley.
See you there. It's been a great show, Marin. And you're listening to Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.